This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your daily voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, here's your host, Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, hello, everyone, and welcome to Washington Watch. Coming up, ISIS has claimed credit for another terrorist attack in Europe, this time in Brussels, the home of NATO and the European Parliament. A member of the House Select Committee on Intelligence, Congressman Mike Pompeo, joins us with the latest. And the North Carolina legislature is going into special session tomorrow to counter an ordinance by the city of Charlotte that, according to the American College of Pediatrics, will put children at risk. Lieutenant Governor of North Carolina, Dan Forrest, is here a bit later to explain. Also, I may have a special guest joining me a little bit later on the program. You'll want to stick around for that. The website, TonyPerkins.com, TonyPerkins.com. You can find out more about today's program, our guest, and resources there. If you are in Utah or Arizona and you have not yet voted, hey, today is election day for you. Your opportunity to weigh in on this presidential primary. Whether you are Republican or Democrat. But anyway, you can weigh in today. If you need a voter guide to help you understand where the presidential candidates stand on the key issues, that too can be found at TonyPerkins.com. All right, it's right there for you. All right, if you're on Twitter, you can keep up with me at T Perkins. And the phone number a little bit later when we open up the phone lines, 866-372-7234. Jot that number down. All right, the president today last night and today in Cuba. And the president, I mean, I'll just let you hear from him. He made, before he addressed the Cuban people, he made reference to the latest attacks by ISIS. Now, listen to what the president had to say.
To President Castro, the people of Cuba, thank you so much for the warm welcome that I have received, that my family have received, and that our delegation has received. It is an extraordinary honor to be here today. Before I begin, please indulge me. I want to comment on the terrorist attacks that have taken place in Brussels. The thoughts and the prayers of the American people are with the people of Belgium. And we stand in solidarity with them in condemning these outrageous attacks against innocent people. We will do whatever is necessary to support our friend and ally, Belgium, in bringing to justice those who are responsible. And this is yet another reminder that the world must unite. We must be together, regardless of nationality or race or faith, in fighting against the scourge of terrorism. We can and we will defeat those who threaten the safety and security of people all around the world.
That was the president of the United States with the president of Cuba today talking about these terrorist attacks. Now, did you notice something missing when he was there in Cuba talking about the terrorist attacks? He failed to mention that these were terrorist attacks by Islamic radicals. Okay, somehow that just seems to fall out. He cannot bring himself to say what this is. I mean, whether it's Paris, whether it's San Bernardino, whether it is Turkey, or now in Belgium, in Brussels. Well, as I said, this is the home of NATO. Brussels, the capital of Belgium, the home of NATO and the European Parliament. By the way, the European Parliament recently declared the actions of ISIS in the Middle East as genocide. And the bombings took place at both Brussels International Airport and Melbeek Metro Station, leaving 30 dead and over 200 wounded. And the investigation is early, but the working assumption is by authorities, they believe that these men were a part of the same network related to the Paris attack from November. Joining me now with the latest on this is a member of the House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence. He represents the 4th Congressional District of Kansas. We welcome back Congressman Mike Pompeo. Mike, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Great to be with you today.
All right. It seems like these stories come with more frequency and the details more disturbing. Your initial analysis of the attack in Brussels today?
Well, it's obviously an enormous tragedy. And your point, I heard a little bit of your conversation earlier, this is becoming too common. And it's what happens, frankly, when we're afraid to go out and do what it takes to defeat an enemy that has clearly declared war on the West. And so all of the actions are inactions, as you care to describe them, of this administration with respect to allowing Al-Qaeda and ISIS and radical Islamic terrorism to expand and have safe havens, their reluctance to do the law enforcement work that needs to be done and the intelligence work that needs to be done ultimately creates increased risk of events just like today and the tragedy that we have now, dozens dead, hundreds injured, and still terrorists on the loose.
Now, Congressman, I'm sure you have seen or been briefed on the report by French investigators, the 55-page report in the wake of November's attack there in Paris. And one of the things that suggests there's a lot of problems here, but one of the huge contributing factors to this is Europe and their move to have no borders and the way these terrorists are able to float freely from terrorist countries into Europe. I mean, that clearly, the immigration issue and the lack of protection of borders is clearly an issue.
Yes, sir. It's plain on its face. Anyone with an ounce of common sense could figure as much. European borders, they've had free transit as between. They've allowed neighborhoods to become zones where law enforcement did not do the work that it needed to do. We can't permit that kind of thing to happen here in the United States. We have a task. And frankly, neither Republicans nor Democrats have taken this task on. Now it's an American issue. We've got to do the work that permits us to know who's coming in and out of our country, to control the flow of immigrants to this country, and make sure that we are doing the right thing. We know who's coming in such that the likelihood of an incident like this in the United States doesn't go away. You can't stop them all, but it just becomes greatly reduced because we have a handle on who's entering our nation.
All right. With that in mind, Congressman, three steps the next president needs to take to fill the void left by the lack of policy or bad policy from this president to keep this country, America, safe?
So I'd start with an intense and robust effort to destroy ISIS. And those aren't just words. There's actions that flow from them. It includes flying more than just a couple of sorties a day, understanding that while we want to keep collateral damage to a minimum, there are lots of things we could be doing to destroy the leadership, the communications elements, and their ability to continue to regenerate funds and soldiers. So a full-on destruction of ISIS, a comparable action not only in Syria where we think of ISIS being, but in all places that terror strikes with respect to a broader threat from radical Islam. It's not just ISIS. It's Al-Qaeda. It's Al-Nusra Front. It's Harar al-Sham. The group names change, but their desire to destroy the West does not. So we need to do that as well. And then the final thing, I guess I give two final things. The third item is we need to have a robust intelligence capacity. And that needs to be working with our allies, with their intelligence and ours. And we need to make sure that we give the tools to both law enforcement and our soldiers, sailors, airmen, and Marines such that they can conduct intelligence operations to identify high-risk areas and begin to take these networks down in a way that reduces risk. And then finally, we need a leader who's prepared to talk about the real threat from radical Islamic terrorism. There's always an importance to speaking truth about these important issues, and we have a president who has declined to do that for his entire, now almost two full terms in office.
Let me ask you about that, because I know that is often said. I've said it myself. I agree with it, that, you know, if you're not willing to identify the enemy, there's no way you can defeat the enemy. But it's not just a matter of semantics. It's not just a matter of, you know, being willing to say Islamic terrorist or the Muslim terrorist. I mean, if you fail to say that out of fear of offending, you are leaving yourself vulnerable and you're playing into the hands of the enemy.
That's exactly right. I've said this a number of times, and I've been mocked from time to time about what are the importance of the words. But, of course, it's with those words is a recognition of what it is you're up against. And you can, once you've identified the fact that they are at war with us, and it is not enough to just say, we don't want to be part of that war, we're going to go away. It's a recognition of the severity of the risk to the homeland and to Americans abroad, as we saw today. We have to begin by identifying the threat. And once you do that, all the full power of the United States of America can be brought to bear. Diplomacy, military action, intelligence operations, homeland security, all of the things that go into keeping Americans safe can come from a leader who declares to the folks who work for him in the executive branch that this is, in fact, a real threat, that we are at war with radical Islamic terrorists, and we're going to defeat them. That the utterance of those words drives enormous policy decisions within the bureaucracy, and it has been missing. And so we've been missing lots of the tactical activities that follow from it as well.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Congressman Mike Pompeo, Kansas, is with me. Still to come, North Carolina Lieutenant Governor Dan Forrest is with us about their special session starting tomorrow. You may not agree with me, and feel free to disagree with me. That's fine. But you're a graduate of the West Point. You've served in the Army. I was in the Marine Corps, and one of the things that when you operate as a unit, when you operate as a body, you're held accountable for what others do. And that's one way you kind of police yourself by, you know, those who mess up are kept in line by the guys that do it right. And this political correctness of, well, we don't want to offend the Muslim community by saying that these are actually Muslim terrorists, would it not put the onus on them to clean up their community and hold these terrorists in check if we're willing to call this what it is?
Completely. I don't disagree one lick. We now know that in a place called Molenbeek, Belgium, and frankly other communities in Europe as well, that these folks have been hiding essentially in plain sight. And you know in your neighborhood, you have a sense of what's going on. You may not know everything. But they're seeing it. They attend the same mosques. They go to the same schools. They're aware of these folks who have become radicalized. Excuse me. And they have an obligation to assist law enforcement, just as you and I do when we see someone who is moving towards committing a crime, and to help law enforcement identify that risk and to close it down. I'm not talking about creating a nation of narcs and people who spy and follow each other around, but simply making sure that they understand that within the Islamic faith there are folks who practice the Muslim faith who don't want to be extremists, and they need to help us identify those who do.
It sounds like a slogan. See something, say something. I think I've seen that somewhere before.
Yes, sir.
All right. Congressman Mike Pompeo, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you very much, buddy. Have a good day.
All right, you too. Congressman Mike Pompeo of Kansas. To find out more, go to the website, TonyPerkins.com. All right. Don't go away. When we come back, North Carolina, the legislature taking really extraordinary actions in calling themselves into session to deal with an ordinance that was passed in the city of Charlotte, the bathroom bill that puts kids at risk. We're going to be joined by the Lieutenant Governor of North Carolina, Dan Forrest, when we return. Don't go away. There's a lot more Washington Watch still to come.
To visit the Lincoln Memorial, that is an awe-inspiring moment on our tour of Washington, D.C., the Spiritual Heritage Tour of Washington, D.C., our nation's capital, and Mount Vernon, the home of George and Martha Washington. As you look up at the statue of Abraham Lincoln, you turn around and you look back towards the Washington Monument and the United States Capitol down the Washington Mall. Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association and American Family Radio. That's just one visit on one day in our tour of our nation's capital. We call it a spiritual heritage tour. We're going there. We're also going to Colonial Williamsburg, Jamestown, and Yorktown on a separate trip that's back-to-back. You can do one or you can do both. For all the information on these spiritual heritage tours in June and September, visit SpiritualHeritageTours.com. That's SpiritualHeritageTours.com for all the information.
Hi, this is Steve Tiber, president, co-founder of 8 Days of Hope. 8 Days of Hope was meant to be a one-time trip to Bay St. Louis, Waveland, Mississippi, after Hurricane Katrina. And then God got involved. And since then, we have been to 9 different states, rebuilt 1,700 homes, and it's all because we love Jesus. God tells us to love Him and love others, and that's what we do, either through 8 Days of Hope or a new ministry called Hope Reigns. Hope Reigns goes immediately after disaster, a tornado, a flood, a fire, a snowstorm. But what we notice with disasters is right after disaster, there's so many ministry opportunities. We've already been to New York, Illinois, Tennessee, Texas. So if someone's interested in 8 Days of Hope or Hope Reigns, the best place to go is our website, 8daysofhope.com. And even though we might not have an event planned the day you go to the website, if you give us your email address on our website, we'll be able to contact you about future events.
This is a Decency Minute. I'm Bill Johnson. As research and common sense indicate, those who view pornography are soon not satisfied with the material they consume and so escalate to more explicit and extreme forms of pornography. Not only do we know this, but so do the publishers of the Sports Illustrated Swimsuit Magazine. This so-called swimsuit magazine has been, and still is, a gateway drug to harder and harder forms of pornography. In 1982, the cover model wore a one-piece bathing suit. In recent years, SI Swimsuit features topless women on the cover, and the magazine content is more of the same, dozens of erotic photos of topless or completely nude women. Christ reminds us in His Word that he who lusts commits adultery. Guard your heart, dear friend in Christ. Place no wicked thing before your eyes. Psalm 101, 3a. This is a Decency Minute. I'm Bill Johnson.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. So glad you're with us on this Tuesday afternoon. A lot of crazy stuff going on. We've been tracking a lot of these pieces of legislation in schools, cities, and liberals like to say they're pushing these gender-neutral bills for the sake of kids. But new research suggests they're doing it despite the kids. The American College of Pediatrics is sounding the alarm, saying that these type of policies actually endanger kids and catch them at a very vulnerable age and lock them into something that, quite frankly, is not only not natural, it's harmful. Well, North Carolina is pushing back against an ordinance in Charlotte. It's the state leaders, the legislature going into special session. They have the ability to put the brakes on what the city of Charlotte is doing. And the lieutenant governor is leading the charge, Lieutenant Governor Dan Forrest. And he joins me now this afternoon on Washington Watch. Lieutenant Governor, welcome to Washington Watch.
Tony, thanks for having me on today.
Governor, tell our listeners what's going on there in the state of North Carolina.
Well, back a month or so ago, the city of Charlotte passed an ordinance in the attempt to appease the transgender community in the city. And really what they did with that ordinance was a bathroom ordinance saying that basically a transgender person could use whichever bathroom they chose to use, a male or a female bathroom. But in doing that, they really went way too far. They reached beyond where they should have gone, and they created a significant loophole that really says that any man that claims to be any gender at any time can walk into any women's bathroom, girls' locker room, school bathroom, school locker room, anywhere, in any facility, whether that's private or public, and has to be accommodated in that facility. And really what it does is it endangers women and children in our state. And so we are taking the action tomorrow by calling a special session to strike down that ordinance in Charlotte.
Now, the legislature there in North Carolina has that authority to go and take action to stop an ordinance that would supersede policies of the state or put the state or the citizens of the state in danger. So how does that work there in North Carolina?
Well, it's there's two ways that a special session can be called. One is by the governor calling that special session. The other way, which we're doing here tomorrow, is by the lieutenant governor and the speaker of the House calling for a special session with the signatures of three-fifths of each chamber, the House and the Senate. We have those signatures in hand. We have a bill that has been written, and we will start session tomorrow at 10 o'clock to start the proceedings for striking down this ordinance. You know, the state, Tony, in North Carolina, the state has really the right to create public accommodations laws. And so when cities or municipalities step beyond their bounds in trying to do that themselves, then the state has to step in and fix it.
So how long will this process take once the legislature comes in tomorrow?
Well, the hope is that we can get it done in a day, that we're in and out tomorrow. Hopefully the governor will sign the bill once it's complete, and hopefully he'll do that tomorrow as well or the next day, and we can beat the April 1st deadline. That's our goal. April 1st is the deadline for the ordinance in Charlotte that would take effect if we did nothing on the 1st of April, and we want to make sure we protect our women and children in the state. I mean, it's our primary concern here. By trying to appease the transgender community, of which I think you know about 7 in every 1,000 people even claim to be transgender, to appease that 7, they're putting in danger 993. We don't think that's very good policy, and so we need to do our job.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. I'm joined by the Lieutenant Governor of North Carolina, Dan Forrest, talking about a special session that starts tomorrow there in the state of North Carolina to essentially protect the citizens of Charlotte, where you have a city council that has responded or become activist in advancing one of these bathroom bills. What has the governor said? Is the governor committed one way or the other on this measure?
Originally, the governor said that he would take immediate action on the ordinance if it was passed. Then he chose not to call a special session. So I don't really speak for the governor, but we believe that we needed to take action as a legislative body prior to the April 1st deadline. So that's why we went about doing what we did.
Okay. Governor Forrest, let me ask you this question. We have a lot of listeners in North Carolina. What can they do to be helpful in this process?
Well, I think that the House and the Senate have done their job to get to this point. I think that anything your listeners can do to call the legislature in North Carolina, to contact them, to contact the governor and encourage the governor to sign this legislation into law as well. Just be an encouragement to as many people as possible to protect our women and children, protect the moral standards of our culture here, and make sure that we do the right thing tomorrow.
Well, I have to say, this is, having been in a legislative body back in Louisiana, this is no small matter for the legislature itself to call a session. This is pretty significant, and I commend you for your leadership and the House Speaker, Tim Moore, for stepping forward as well and providing
Thank
this. Because it's, I know a little bit about this, about the how vicious the proponents of these types of legislation, how they'll, I'll be nice, twist the facts and attack people. But I commend you for your leadership, Governor.
Well, thank you, Tony. It's the first time in 35 years that the legislature has called itself back into a session like this. We want to make sure we do it right, and I think we'll do that tomorrow.
All right. Lieutenant Governor Dan Forrest, thanks so much for taking some time out this afternoon and joining us.
Thank you, as always, Tony. Have a great day.
All right. Lieutenant Governor Dan Forrest from North Carolina. All right, folks, this is your opportunity to make a difference. If you'd like to find out more about how you can contact the governor or contact members of the North Carolina legislature, go to the website, TonyPerkins.com, and follow the links over. Look, you actually have leaders here that are taking a stand. Support them. You know, how many times on this program have people called and said, we don't have leaders that are standing up? And even yesterday, people saying they're tired of Republicans. Look, here are Republican leaders that are standing up for the values that you say are important. So stand with them. Back them up. Go to the website, TonyPerkins.com. All right, folks, don't go away. When we come back, something a little special right here on Washington Watch.
making the most of your money. Here's Dan Celia.
One of the questions I get all the time is, when should I start receiving Social Security? It's a good question, and it's one that's been wrestled with for years. Of course, there's a lot of viewpoints out there, and my viewpoint is a little bit different than most. The general viewpoint is, look, start collecting Social Security as early as you possibly can. The sooner you start, the more you're going to end up with in the long run. That's an okay viewpoint, I guess. If you are thinking about, well, I'm 62 now, I'm going to start accumulating some wealth. Too late. It's not the time to be thinking about that, in my opinion. From a personal perspective, I'm not going to start collecting Social Security, Lord willing, until I'm 70. And I'm going to receive 31% more money every month by waiting till I'm age 70. See, here's the thing. You need to change your focus. Forget about how much you're going to accumulate or how much you're going to get out of the government if you live a long time. And start thinking about the only thing that matters, and the only thing, trust me on this, that's going to matter to you, is, do I have enough income to pay my monthly expenses? It's all that should matter. The only thing that should matter is receiving, collecting as much fixed income as you possibly can. I think it pays to wait, as long as you possibly can. Take that Social Security at a later date. Oh, I know overall you're not going to receive as much, but I guarantee you, as your monthly expenses go up, you'll appreciate the fact that you have more income every month coming in because you waited. Ultimately, that's all you're going to care about.
Experience Dan Celia in person. Find a faith, family, and finance town hall meeting or seminar near you at afafoundation.net.
Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Glad to have you along on this Tuesday afternoon. The website, TonyPerkins.com. All right, we're trying to get that contact information up there for you on the website, so if it's not there yet, come back again. But again, if you're in North Carolina, it'd be very helpful for you to weigh in on this. In a minute, I'm going to talk a little bit more about the study that was released yesterday, this report or a statement by the American College of Pediatrics. I'll talk more about that because I think it's very important as we see these ordinances and policies being pushed all across the country. Okay. I told you I was going to have a special guest, to me, a very special guest. Today, I and my wife and I should say, to make the proper English, are celebrating 30 years of marriage. It was 30 years ago on this date that we began a journey, an incredible journey. It's been a lot of fun. There's been a few valleys, a couple steep places, but it's been a lot of fun. And 30 wonderful years and five tremendous children later, here we are. And my special guest is my wife, Luana, joining me here behind the microphone. Happy anniversary.
Happy anniversary to you.
You know, depending on your perspective, you know, when I think of 30 years, we were talking about that this morning over our first cup of coffee. 30 years sounds like a long time, but it's actually not.
It's gone by fast.
It's gone by extremely fast, almost like this segment in this radio. When it's over, you'll say, boy, that was fast, even though you didn't say that as you were sitting down here. It's been remarkable. You've been a wonderful wife, very patient, very supportive. But I want to ask you something because, as I said, a perspective for us, 30 years doesn't sound like a long time. There's probably some folks out there listening on their way home from work. 30 years sounds like a lifetime. Believe me, folks, it's not. It goes by extremely quick. But as you've heard me talk about it, and I'm not saying anything, Luana, on here that you've not that we've not talked about, our first couple of years were a little rough. But I want to ask you a question. When those out there listening to this, what is it the most? What would you say is one of the most important things to one of the most important keys to making marriage work that you have discovered in 30 years? And then I'll share mine.
one of the, I think the most important thing is knowing and doing the word of what the word of God says. Proverbs 29:11 says, "A fool vents all his feelings, and a wise man holds them back." So that tells me that I don't have to speak everything that's on my mind. In fact, 2 Corinthians 10:5 says that we're to bring every thought into captivity to the obedience of Christ. So I know I don't need to speak everything I think. Everything I think may not even be
true. So in other words, when your husband is acting like an idiot, you don't have to say it.
I don't have to say it.
Okay.
But this is a twofold thing. Not only do I not have to speak everything, I'm not saying I don't have to say anything, but everything I don't have to speak, but it's twofold. The second part is found in Philippians 4:6, and it tells us that we are to, in every situation, make our request known to God. With all prayer and supplication, make our request known to God. And so when there are times when I think things, I don't have to speak it, but I go to God. I don't have to go to my mom. I don't have to go to my girlfriends. I go to God, and I say, "Lord, help me with this situation." And one of two things are going to happen. Either God's going to change my husband's heart, or he's going to change my heart. And either way, it's great, because the outcome is always good. So that would be what I would have to say is, you know what God's word says, and then do it. Be a doer of the word. Don't be a fool. Invent all your feelings. And pray about everything. Everything.
And that is so true, that God can change our hearts, our minds. When we confront one another with things we don't agree with, we just dig in. But if we're truly listening to God, God can change those things.
Yeah.
When I would say what I have learned most is marry a patient woman who will grow with you and work with you. It was a turning point for me, and I'm still working. Paul said that, you know, I have not yet obtained. And I, by no means am I suggesting that we here, sitting here, have, finished the race. We're still in the midst of it, learning each and every day. But, you know, we actually get along pretty good. We were talking the other day. We were hard-pressed to find out the last time we had an argument.
Yeah.
Because the Scripture says, you know, don't go to bed angry, you know. And of course, we don't do that. There's a lot of times we don't go to sleep for 3 or 4 days, but no, just kidding. I think it is when we look at the relationship that Jesus said that Christ is to the church, he uses marriage as that illustration. And when he talks about Paul treating your wife as Christ did the church, giving himself for it, when I came to a full understanding of that, it kind of changed my whole view of marriage. Again, haven't obtained it yet, but I am pursuing it from that perspective.
And I'm praying for you.
Let me say happy anniversary.
Happy anniversary.
All right, folks, don't go away. We're back with more Washington Watch after this.
After 8 years of sustained attack on our most cherished values by the Obama administration, the 2016 presidential election will prove to be a critical juncture for our nation. FRC Action is here to help prepare you to vote with the Values Voter Presidential Voter Guide. Determining the right presidential candidate to lead our nation can be difficult amidst the media spin of political rhetoric. Our voter guide includes each candidate's answer to important questions affecting faith, family, and freedom. It compiles the candidate's stated positions on a range of issues, including Planned Parenthood funding, the repeal of Obamacare, the future of natural marriage, the protection of religious liberty, and more. Go to frcaction.org/2016 to view the Values Voter Guide. You can also watch videos of the candidates explain how they would protect our religious freedom as president. Again, that's frcaction.org/2016.
What are students saying about Wesley Biblical Seminary? Here's Melissa Clayton.
I've been in our urban missions for 25 to 30 years. Wesley has been part of God's surprise journey for me, a wonderful fellowshipping journey of knowing the Lord and Savior like I've never known Him before.
I'm John Nyhoff, president of Wesley Biblical Seminary. Come and be a part of our community.
Apply today at wbs.edu. Wesley Biblical Seminary. Discover the difference.
American Family Radio. 25 years on the battlefront for your family.
It's just so uplifting.
What's your story? How have you been blessed?
Have you been equipped for the culture war?
I've been able to call my senators and my representatives.
The men on the shows really kind of helped me decide and shape my worldview.
Call 877-876-8893 and tell us your story. American Family Radio. 25 years on the battlefront for your family.
I've been listening to AFR for probably 27 or 8 years. Got hooked on it. I've gotten educated, try to stay informed, and it helps me to be grounded. Heard a lot of good preaching, informative programs like Sandy Rios and Brian Fisher. But spiritually, I've grown a lot, gotten more grounded, and really firm in my beliefs. I was raised in church, but there's things that even a Christian can compromise on if they're not really grounded in the Word. And it's kind of like you want to tell your kids, put yourself in this situation and know how you're going to respond before you're there. And you don't have to think about it or try to make a decision then. You already know what you believe. And AFR has helped me to become a more grounded Christian.
You can hear more stories of changed lives during our three-day share-a-thon starting April 12th. American Family Radio, 25 years on the battlefront for your family.
Listen to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. Glad to have you along on this Tuesday afternoon. My wife has left, so it's just me back here behind the microphone. We are going out to dinner tonight. Anyway, it has been it's been a joy to be married. And I want to just encourage you. I'm going to do something we don't do a whole lot here on the program. We're usually talking about policies, and we're talking about, politics. I want to talk personal for just a moment. I do want to encourage folks out there, because it is tough today to be married in the environment that we're in and have a thriving marriage, not just getting by. And I don't think that's God's design. God's design for us is not just to be, locked into a relationship that is draining and miserable. But it does begin with us looking inward before we look outward. And I want to encourage you in your marriage, especially you young couples that are married and having some struggles at the beginning. Like, that's normal. It's what you're doing is you're taking two individuals that are very unique and in some cases strong personalities, and you're throwing them together. And they're having to make adjustments, and you're no longer living for yourself. You're living for somebody else. It's the process of becoming one. And that takes a little while. But as Christians, we are. It's a threefold cord. It's not just us. It's not just husband and wife, but it is God through the presence of the Holy Spirit in our lives and that bonding that takes place. But we have to yield ourselves up to God. And men, you need to take the initiative. You need to be the leader in this. And you can't expect, if you come into marriage wanting your wife just to meet your needs and you to be what she, you want her to meet the expectations you have of what marriage is, it's just not going to work. You got to put aside what culture has created as marriage and pursue it from a biblical perspective. And again, look, let me give the disclaimer here. I'm not speaking as one who has arrived, but one who is on the journey. All right, I'm going to transition back into policy. We were talking with the Lieutenant Governor of North Carolina earlier,
about the special session that they're having tomorrow, and wanted to go back to this report from the American College of Pediatrics. Now, you know, as we were talking earlier, you know, it seems like every time we turn around, there's another city or a school board that's pushing a policy that tells children to, you know, ignore biology, which they should be teaching. You have these waves of gender-neutral bathroom and athletic proposals coming up. Gender isn't a matter of self-determination, the American College of Pediatrics is arguing. Now, I'm reading now from the Daily Update. If you're on my update, you'll be getting this in your email inbox momentarily. If not, you can be. Go to TonyPerkins.com and sign up for it. The American College of Pediatrics is arguing and suggesting otherwise, that this, in fact, can harm children for life. These policies that are being pushed by these LGBTQ activists. This isn't about helping children find themselves or accepting them for who they are. It's about glamorizing a disorder with lifelong consequences. When legislatures or educators indulge and encourage this confusion, the ACP warns, it's child abuse. In a strong response to the transgender ideology marching across America, U.S. pediatricians are urging a complete and total rejection of these so-called non-discrimination bills. Quote, conditioning children into believing a lifetime of chemical and surgical impersonation of the opposite sex is normal and healthful is child abuse, they write in a statement that was released yesterday. In an 8-point dismantling of the trans movement, they remind Americans that gender confusion is, in fact, a mental disorder, a fact, the ACP points out, that has never been disproven. Quote, when an otherwise healthy biological boy believes he is a girl, or an otherwise healthy biological girl believes she is a boy, an objective psychological problem exists that lies in the mind, not the body. And it should be treated as such, end quote. Now, no one, the pediatricians explain, is born with a gender. Everyone is born with a biological sex. Gender, an awareness of and sense of oneself as male or female, is a sociological and psychological concept, not an objective biological one. People who identify as feeling like the opposite sex or somewhere in between do not comprise a third sex. They remain biologically men or biologically women. For the vast majority of students, this kind of sexual expression is just a phase. Quote, according to the DSM/V, as many as 98% of gender-confused boys and 88% of gender-confused girls eventually accept their biological sex after naturally passing through puberty, end quote. Yet, here we are as a society crafting entire policies and putting whole populations at risk for a tiny minority of students who have a fleeting flirtation with another gender. Or is it about something even bigger than that? Is it about those who have made these bad decisions and they're hoping to lead others into this confusion? You know, this isn't just a disservice to these young men and women, but to the other students. I mean, think about this for a moment. Those other students who are left to cope with the invasion of their privacy, whether it's in the locker room or the bathroom at the school. I mean, and as the lieutenant governor of North Carolina pointed out, it's a safety issue. When you're talking about public restrooms being opened up to anyone who says, you know, it could be a man who says he feels like a woman and has therefore a right to use the female facilities or dressing room or locker room, whatever it may be, there's a safety issue. Instead of helping these children and adults, we're sentencing them to a miserable life because we refuse to address the underlying issues. We're covering it up. We're sweeping it under the rug and saying, oh, no, this is healthy. This is good. It's not. Even in places that embrace this alternative gender universe, people still suffer. Quote, rates of suicide are 20 times greater among adults who use cross-sex hormones and undergo sex reassignment surgery, even in Sweden, which is among the most LGBTQ-affirming countries, the pediatricians noted. Quote, continuing the quotation, what compassionate and reasonable person would condemn young children to this fate, knowing that after puberty, as many as 88% of girls and 98% of boys will eventually accept reality and achieve a state of mental and physical health, end quote. I mean, political correctness has locked us into going down a path where we're literally willing to sacrifice our children. Because there are those who, you know, the old saying, misery loves company. Look, I know that's not kind, not politically correct, but it's true. We have those people who have made these lifestyle choices, and sometimes choices have been made for them, and now they're trying to affirm their lifestyle by drawing others into it. It's exactly what this is, and it's our children. And so many people are afraid to speak up because of the backlash that will come. I mean, yes, I know how vicious the homosexual activists are. Remember, we had a gunman. We had a homosexual activist come into our building with 100 rounds of ammunition intending to kill all of us, and he shot one of our people. I know. I mean, we get the emails. We get the tweets. We get the threats. You know, it's very common for the FBI to be investigating one of the threats against us from these folks who preach tolerance. Like, I know that. But you know what? Our children, the future of this country, and even children who are not mine, but they're other people's children, your children. I care about your children. They're the future of our country. I think they're worth speaking out for. And that's why I applaud when you have someone like Lieutenant Governor Dan Forrest and the House Speaker Tim Moore there in North Carolina willing to take the sling, take the arrows and say, you know what? Look, I know what you guys, I know what you guys are doing. I know how you control the big business community, and I know that you're going to make all these threats just like they're doing down in Georgia where the NFL's threatening to remove Georgia from consideration of the Super Bowl if they protect this watered-down, mediocre piece of legislation that would protect religious freedom, protect the rights of people to hold a view that marriage is a union between a man and a woman. I get that. I see that. I mean, I see how Walmart responded there in Arkansas last year, killing the religious freedom. I see how big business is walking lockstep with the left, and I know how that's worked, how that's been working. And for those political leaders who are willing to stand up and say, you know what, I know there's risk in this. I know there's political risk because of how the media is controlled by, influenced heavily by the left, and big business has bought into this agenda. I know there's risk, but I'm going to do the right thing. Folks, how can we then not stand up with those leaders? Pastors, how is it that we expect political leaders to take stands on these issues and speak on these issues when many pastors won't touch these things from the pulpit? Politics is downstream from culture. Culture is downstream, I believe, from the church. And if when we see leaders standing up like this, we need to encourage them. We need to stand with them. And so I again want to encourage you folks, especially in North Carolina, but then you can be outside of North Carolina, be anywhere in the country. Because when leaders like this stand up, it sends a message to leaders in other parts of the country to actually be bold and to stand up and to protect our children and our communities against this radical agenda of the left. So, again, on the website, TonyPerkins.com, there is a link where you can you can find out how to contact your elected officials there in North Carolina. I believe you can also get the governor's contact information and encourage the governor to stand up there in North Carolina with the legislature. And by the way, these measures are going through in other states. Minnesota, there's a bill there in Minnesota. HB 3215, Louisiana has a bill that's been introduced. SB 332, Kentucky has Senate Bill 176. Michigan has a bill. Idaho, Arizona, Missouri. I mean, they're all over. Encourage your leaders to care more about the community, more about the children than political correctness. And you care enough. Care enough to speak up. Care enough to support those who are standing up. Look, it's time that it's time we say enough is enough. Enough is enough. You know, we were talking about this yesterday with this presidential race and how people are so tired of the Republicans who continually cave on so many issues and why people are supporting Donald Trump. Because he's unbridled by political correctness, which I applaud. I applaud that. But you got to have a foundation and a track record. And we need to encourage more leaders to stand up and push back against these radical agendas. Our communities are at risk. They're at stake. All right. Well, I wanted to talk about that. Unfortunately, we're not going to get a chance to go to phone calls today. But it's encouraging, actually, to see this study coming out from the American College of Pediatrics. And Google that. You can find it yourself. But again, if you're not getting my update, you can do so by going to the website, TonyPerkins.com, and signing up to get this type of information on a daily basis. And then, you know, you should forward this on to your legislators in your state, city council members. Be tracking these special bathroom bills, these special rights for people based upon their sexual behavior. They're coming, if they're not already there, they're coming to a community near you, and you need to be equipped and prepared to push back on them to protect your communities. So again, website TonyPerkins.com, on Twitter at T Perkins, and I am now going to go and celebrate our anniversary with my wife. Until next time, I hope you'll be back tomorrow. Lord willing, I will be. Until then, I leave you with the encouraging words of the Apostle Paul, found in Ephesians 6, where he says, when you've done everything that you can do, when you've prayed, when you've prepared, and when you have taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our new watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.